are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Radio 1, its sponsors, or advertisers.
Tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we can walk it out. Move mountains, we can walk it out and move.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. You're listening to Carol Mileta of Team Radio Baltimore, bringing you another edition of Parenting 411, where we share information parents need from sources they can trust. As we prepare our children to head back to school, I want to take a look at what families of high schoolers are experiencing in this new age of the college admissions process. Now, college admissions in our country has always been a high-stakes, high-cost endeavor, pursuing college education. Now, dating back to 1636, when our nation's oldest college, Harvard University, was founded, parents bet the ranch and sent their children off to college in hopes that they would gain the knowledge and skills needed to build a rewarding career that would enable them to achieve a higher station in life than the previous generation. In the face of escalating college costs, families still have those fundamental hopes today. The problem now is gaining admission is exponentially more competitive as the pursuit of college education is no longer a privilege reserved exclusively for the wealthy. Over the course of decades, access to higher education has greatly increased for the masses. This growth has been fueled by the establishment of more colleges and universities, by desegregation and improvement in the quality of education for minority youth, the advent of government-backed student loan programs, and expanded scholarship funds from the private sector, among other factors. Despite the fact that there are roughly 5,300 colleges in our country today, there is still hot pursuit for the seats at the most elite colleges, resulting in obscenely low acceptance rates, like Cornell University, 10.6% of students accepted for the applications that they receive, 5.9% at Yale, 5.8% at Princeton, Columbia University, 5.1%, Harvard University, 4.5%, as reported by CNN in April of this year. It doesn't get much better as you move out to the next tier, including state schools like the University of Virginia, the University of Michigan, UC Berkeley, and UCLA, with acceptance rates in the high teens to 20%. So, you have higher costs, more competition. How are hardworking students supposed to get into college today? Well, in recent months, there have been revelations that not everybody plays fair. I don't think this was news, but the Varsity Blues investigation conducted by the Department of Justice revealed just how insidious and how pervasive the abuse of the system really is, particularly among the wealthy and otherwise well-connected. From hiring proxies to take college entrance exams, bribing admissions officials, coaches, and other staff, to falsifying academic records and athletic records. We also recently learned of parents, usually pretty well-off parents, transferring custody of their children to others so that they could avoid tuition costs. And I've got to wonder, if you don't want to pay for something so fundamental as the education of your own child and have the means to do so, what else do you need money for? Honestly, these are high-stakes moves the average family cannot even conceive of, let alone entertain. Thankfully, today's guest is joining me, and she will share another way to approach this game, where your children can dramatically increase their chances of getting into the college of their dreams through dint of hard work while building valuable life skills at the same time. She is Susan Tatsui Darcy, an educator, college advisor, and author whom I had the distinct pleasure of meeting at the National Convention of American Mothers Incorporated, where she represented the state of California as 2019 Mother of the Year, and I represented the District of Columbia metro area as Mother of the Year, also for 2019. Since 1979, Susan has been using her vast creative talents in education and writing for the creation of instructional programs and schools, including a day camp, professional tutoring program, again, a private K-12 school, and an educational consulting group. She has written books on topics like education, time management, hair braiding, and my favorite, a wedding planner for busy women. Susan, would you believe that 26 years ago, I used your book to plan my wedding? I will be celebrating my 25th anniversary in September. I couldn't get my hands on my book in time for today's show, but I can assure you that I still have it because I am sentimental that way. And when I find it, I will take a picture of it and send it to you. So welcome, Susan, and let's dive in.
Thank you. That's a surprise. I didn't expect that, Carol.
Well, I was holding out. I was holding out for you as I you know, looked you up over time to prepare for our show. I was like, that is crazy. I mean, can you believe that?
I am. That's wonderful. Wow. Yeah, I'm glad you used it. I'd love to see the cover.
I know. I can't wait to do it because I know I have it because I saved it for sure.
Ah, that's great.
Yes. So welcome again. And I want you to tell our listeners a bit about your educational professional background and how they fed your passion to educate and inform in the years before you created Merit Academy.
Well, I'm an educational administrator, so I am a principal of a school. So I did that for the past 40 years. Mm-hmm. And I've written several books on parenting, time management, wedding planning, and all kinds of books to help mothers. You know, so my whole thing was to help mothers or women figure out how to get their weddings together in a way. And I think my wedding planner was the first wedding planner that ever was published, so it was kind of a new thing. Mm-hmm. And then when I had my kids, you know, how to educate kids, and that's when I realized that kids are born curious, and they're wonderful beings, and they're just, you can nurture them. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody telling me at one point that when your kid turns 7, they're going to stop losing interest in school, and they're going to be, they're going to be harder to deal with. And I kept thinking, not my kids. Mm-hmm. And that's when I took over and decided that I think the system didn't work for me. So I created Merit Academy, you know, as an alternative education situation, and had teachers come to school and teach my kids in a really small group. And what I found, that project-based learning is really, really powerful, not exclusive of regular education. So mm-hmm. I really was fascinated in how you can reach children and inspire them to learn. And I found that if you give them the opportunity to find a project that they really like doing and they believe in it, that they can put all their energy into that, and then they'll want to learn grammar. They're going to want it because they're going to have to write press releases, and they're going to have to write books and, you know, and brochures and websites. But mm-hmm. then they're also going to need their math to be able to create their accounting systems, and they're going to have to learn marketing skills and consumerism. And all those skills are things that make students a stronger as people. You know, they become confident, mm-hmm. and they go out into the world a little more excited and curious about what's going on, and that curiosity does continue. So that was my point, is that if you can keep that light going so the student feels empowered and they don't feel just wiped out and depressed. If you look at what's going on in the news today, you put the news on any channel and it's depressing. You know, mm-hmm, so for students mm-hmm. to look at things like the world where we stand today, and feel helpless, mm-hmm. that is demeaning, and it doesn't do much for their self-esteem or for their well-being.
Right.
So that's kind of the premise behind where I've been my whole life. And I'm basically an activist. I didn't want to use that word, but I've been an activist since I was 17 years old, and I mm-hmm. just feel that keeps you young. You know, that keeps you powerful and young, and it gives you something that you can believe in.
Right, right. Now, so you've kind of told a little bit about how Merit Academy came about. How many students are enrolled at Merit Academy?
We have a small school. It's like less than 25.
Okay.
And it's very small. What we do is we teach children across the country one-on-one. So mm-hmm. every classroom is one student and one teacher, and that's what separates us out. So it's actually more than that because some students don't come full-time.
Right.
We have students who come to Merit, they want to just take AP Bio because they failed it in school for whatever reason. They can take it from us. Our mm-hmm. teacher will go to their home or meet with them in Hangouts. And our students make about 3 years' growth per year. So if they're in fifth grade, by the time they're done with the class with us, they're functioning at an eighth grade level in that academic area. So a lot of families enroll their students in Merit for specific reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got kids all over the country that participate.
Okay. And so what programs and resources do you offer through the academy?
We have Merit Academy, which is a school, so mm-hmm. kids can come to Merit Academy full-time. We also have tutoring, just academic tutoring. And then the most exciting part for me, because this is where I'm involved, is where we do college advisory. So mm-hmm. we offer college advisory. And again, in this program, we have, you know, we help kids choose their colleges. We have a Merit College worksheet where we look at all the 5,000 colleges and help the students pick their majors. And when we pick their majors, we help them choose colleges based on majors, not based on name brands, which is mm-hmm. a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And we also help them with their essays. Of course, we don't write their essays. We guide them, you know, and help mm-hmm. them through the process of thinking of who they are, bringing out their best selves and teaching them how to write so that when they go to college, they can use these skills and continue to write. And we help them through appeals processes and letters of recommendation, writing resumes for their letter writers
mm-hmm.
so that they can write more than, oh, the student was in my class and got a B and really liked the student. He's really great and everybody loves him. They can also write about their projects and other things they do because we put together a comprehensive resume that the teacher can look at as they write that letter of recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
But the most exciting part of what we do outside of Merit Academy and the normal college advisory process is Project Merit. And that's what I do. And that's mm-hmm. where we take ideas and any idea that the student has that they feel excited about, worried about, they want to make a change, that becomes their project. And I guide them through the process of helping them figure out what it is and fine-tune it based on how much time we have. Most kids I work with start at like 8th or 9th grade,
mm-hmm.
and we work for 3 or 4 years to develop the idea so they can really grow it, create a
wow.
website, go out and get people, and they get numbers behind them, they can get funding, and
mm-hmm.
we can show the colleges that this kid really is interested and look what they've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very exciting.
Yeah,
but then on the other hand, go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Finish your thought. I was going to say something else. Go ahead.
So by having the student do a project like that, they're in the position to really stand out in the college admissions process.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do is help them find that passion and hone it down into something that's manageable, you know, whether it's 3 years or if it's 6 months, because some kids come to me in 11th grade,
I
the end
wondering.
Of 11th grade, and say,
yeah.
What can I do? I've heard all about this project thing. And we do. I actually had a student create a concert series in 11 different bands on two different stages in one night, and he got himself into a great college, and he put that together as a fundraiser. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've had kids write books,
mm-hmm.
and they could write a book in 6 months, and they put it out, and it's amazing. You can hand it to the college admissions interviewer during an interview, and they love that kind of thing. They can take it away and look at it later and even pass it on to the admissions committee.
Right.
So,
yeah, that is pretty exciting, and I hope that those who are listening with us, we'll go over to Susan's website. It's www.meritworld.com just to learn a little bit more about Susan, the Merit Academy as well. And you can also pick up the book, which we're going to dive into in just a minute. But Susan, I was going to say that, you know, you are Chief College Advisor at Merit Educational Consultants. So you know a lot about the trends, the recent trends in college admissions and all of that. Were you surprised, though, by the varsity blues scandal earlier this year? And, of course, the most recent revelation that parents were transferring custody of their children to reduce their college tuition obligations. That was just shocking to me. How about you?
Yeah, it was shocking. I mean, I knew this was happening because you see people's names on buildings. You know they're buying their kids, buying their admission to their particular colleges. Mm. But the part that's appalling to me is that the parents are actually hurting their child more than they're helping their child. When they're sending their child to a college and they know that they paid millions of dollars, they also risk going to jail or they may even go to jail for it, and the child has to hold that and as a secret. They're not going to go around telling people, I got in because my parents, bribed and lied. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or, whatever. So they're destroying their child's self-esteem. They're giving their child a direct or even an indirect message that I don't believe in you. I don't think you've got the skills, the wherewithal, right. the intelligence, or the integrity to get into this great college. And maybe they did. I got in, but you're not smart enough to do it, and I'm going to have to bail you out. That mm-hmm. destroys children's self-esteem. So the right out, at the get-go, that's crazy. The other thing is they're putting their child in a college that they don't belong. If they mm-hmm. didn't get in, if they don't get in, they're going to be the lowest rung on that ladder in that college. Mm-hmm. So every class they go to, they're going to be competing with students who belong there, mm-hmm. and they're not. So the
That's
parents are going to have to pay for tutoring, and they're going to have to pay probably to have somebody cheat to get them, to help them pass the test. And we even heard about one student whose father paid for the student to have a replacement person who actually went to college at MIT, I think it was.
Oh, my gosh.
For 4 years. And the student never stepped foot on campus. They just got his. So he graduated. He got the degree, and he went out and tried to apply for jobs. But of course, he didn't get the job because he didn't have any of the skills. He didn't take one class, but he graduated top of the class because his parents paid another student to represent him for 4 years in college. I mean, it just destroys kids. What the parents should do, and I hope listening parents out there. Mm-hmm. Parents who are listening now can get this. The best thing a parent can do, especially if you've got the means to pay for it, is to support your child with a project. Mm-hmm. I've got kids doing projects, all kinds of projects, fighting climate change, mm-hmm. looking at plastics in the ocean. We're looking at the FAA and planes crashing all over the place, all these different things. If these parents would put the money into a mentor who mm-hmm. can help their child or even fund the project, like mm-hmm. for instance, my oldest daughter built a hydrogen fuel cell when mm-hmm. she was 13 years old. She mm-hmm. got into Stanford Medical School, and she's mm-hmm. now an ER doctor. Mm-hmm. It all stemmed from her doing that. Did I do the project? No way. I'm an mm-hmm. educator. I'm not a scientist. I mean, people ask me about fuel cells. I would drive her to these events like at Stanford, and she would give all these presentations. She was actually in D.C. and gave a presentation there. Mm-hmm. And people would come up to me thinking I was the one behind it all. And I looked at them and said, I don't even know how it works.
Right.
And they look at me like, well, who's doing this? Where does this kid come from? Is she a genius?
She worked hard.
Not a genius.
Yeah.
Exactly. She worked hard. I set her up with a mentor. I actually got a grant for her through the Department of Energy in D.C., mm-hmm. and they gave us about, I think, $40,000, and we hired an engineer, and the engineer came in and helped the students build this. And that's what my contribution was to her, was to give her the funds. So these wealthy parents, instead of bribing and cheating mm-hmm. their way into it, if they would give their kids the chance to be able to do these amazing projects that will change the world and give that their child that sense of self-worth and mm-hmm. and that they can contribute to society, they will feel great about themselves, and they'll get into the colleges on their own merit, and they'll be able to stand up proud and puff out their chest and feel like, I'm here because of what I did. And yeah, mom and dad might have financed some of the things, but that it was because of me that I'm here.
Right.
And that's what kids need to do. So wealthy parents, stop pulling out your checkbooks to try to bribe. Pull out your checkbooks to help with climate change. I've got a student that's working on carbon sequestration right now, and the parents are putting money into the research. I mean, he's doing a lot of research, and it does cost some money to do some of these projects, especially engineering projects, because you've got to get somebody who can support the student with ideas, and then you also need to be able to purchase all the equipment and the materials. So some things get to be a little pricey.
Right. And I want to interject project, especially for parents of younger children, because they may have, you described how your daughter created this hydrogen cell at age 13. And that may sound daunting, but, you know, the fact that your daughter was even able to do something like that at 13 is because a foundation was built earlier on. So when they have projects, you know, just smaller scale projects, you know, in elementary school and all of that, and even whether it's projects around the house, doing housework, I mean, as much as possible, help train them, provide the opportunity for them to learn and then do, because that's what builds the confidence and that's what prepares them to take on progressively more challenging projects by themselves. And so you can't wait until high school, say, for example, and throw them out there and, hey, create a project, because they really will have no frame of reference. It's really important to practice it younger. So, you know, don't the projects that, you know, Susan is describing here, they're phenomenal. But just remember that there's a lot you can do just little by little as your children are growing to help them to be strong enough, courageous enough, and independent enough to take on the projects that she's talking about that can make a difference not only in their communities and around the country, but also something that will set them apart when they apply to college. So I want to talk about the book and really what it offers and what parents could expect if they were to check out the book and how it's laid out. Let's talk a little bit about how it's laid out. I mean, I thought it was just very, very useful for kids. It really just gives them a complete blueprint almost for how to get started. So let's talk about that and how the project that you describe in the book differs from a school assignment that they might receive.
Okay. Well, let's first talk about the latter. The project that we're talking about is not like the kinds of projects most kids do in school. Those projects are organized by a teacher. So the teacher will tell them, you have to do this. Here are the parameters. Here are all the deadlines, and they lead them through each little step so they can get it all done within a semester. So they've got one semester, or maybe two for a full year project. They have a full year for like AP, for IB projects. But they get it done, but they're under the tutelage of a teacher, and they're doing it because of a grade. So it doesn't require that the student have a passion about it. It doesn't require that the student do the thinking and go out there and get some bumps and bruises along the way, because that's what builds character and that's what builds the strength that makes somebody a really dynamic person. So these projects that we're talking about are individual projects that have usually never been done before. So what I like to do is have the student just talk about what they're interested in life. I had a student who came to me and just couldn't find a project at all. Nothing interested her at all. She was very, very comfortable in her life. Dad would drop her off. He's an ER doc. And she would just come in and just with her bottle of water, she just put it down on the table and just talked about everything going on at school. And everything was hunky-dory. Nothing seemed to be a problem for her. And I asked her, I just said, hey, you know, in your bottle of water, do you realize that you're drinking prescription drugs? And she flipped. And she said, no way. And I said, yes. And I actually picked up the phone and called the water treatment plant and said, do you test for prescription drugs in our water? And they said, no. And she just looked at me and she goes, that's crazy. And I said, and do you remove prescription drugs from the water that we drink in our county? And they said, no, we don't have the funds to do that. Mm. And that became her project. She was irate. She says, I bought this water. And she says, I can't believe that there's prescription drugs in the water. And that became her project.
That's a great example. And actually, we have a caller real quick. Let's see see what he wants to say.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
My name is Patrick Henderson, and I live here in Baltimore, and I have an after-school program here at Liberty Tech and Rec.
Yes.
And it's a music program, and I have some very bright children in there, and I'm trying, their parents are in a quandary because they don't know where to send their children when they leave that great nurturing attitude and atmosphere of a Liberty Elementary School.
Right.
I have recommended that they go to the Montessori schools, but there's a waiting list. So to hear of this organization, and I'm excited about it, and I have a few questions for for the lady, okay. The founder.
So what's your question?
Mm-hmm. My first question is, this is based, sounds like the system that they're using in Finland. Is this true? Is this based on basically what they're using over there as far as projects? Instead of teaching children how to read, they read and write. They give them projects and then teach them from that perspective.
Susan?
Well, no, it's not like the Finland schools. I know what you're talking about, that they're very successful programs, but this is not like that, because we actually want our students to still stay in English so they can learn grammar and they can learn writing mechanics, they can learn how to write essays, that they still stay in their algebra, geometry, algebra 2, calculus classes, so they develop those skills, because they won't get that kind of training doing a project. As much as they say that Finland and everybody else says that you can do a project and it'll satisfy everything else, I don't agree. I still believe that kids need to have the foundation, academics, to build the foundation they need to be able to be successful when they get to university.
Okay. And you had another question?
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to ask her, I think one of the great successes of the number one school system in the world, which is Finland, is that they allow the children to have liberty. They teach them liberty, liberty of thought, liberty of critical thinking. And before you hang up on me, I want to know, how do we get in touch? I had to run in the store for a minute. It's Merit. What is the name of the organization? Oh,
the website is meritworld.com, and you'd be able to learn about Merit Academy and probably the educational consulting and books that Susan has written as well.
Is the school, what is the tuition? Is there, how much is it? Is it free or is it about need, or how much does it cost to attend the school?
It depends on how many classes you sign up for, but if you go to the website, you'll get all the information there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So meritworld.com.
Got you. Thank you so much.
And the other, just to answer your question about the projects, the student can go to any school. They can go to a public school and they can do a project after school. The school does not dictate the project. So what I'm saying is they can actually go to a school that's free, a public school, and then they can do a project separately, and they can put the parents can put their finances into that project. So depending on what the child is doing, they can actually do a project like writing a book or starting a nonprofit organization, which costs nothing, you know, or they can engineer a device that might cost $40,000. But it depends on what the student comes up with. And even if a student comes up with a project like building a fuel cell, like my daughter did, she came up with the idea, and then we talked to a couple scientists who said, you know what, the Department of Energy in Washington, D.C. is doing this now. I bet they'd be interested. I actually called the Department of Energy on the phone with three or four students in my office. I just left a message for the person in charge and just said, I've got six or seven of the brightest kids in the country. They want to build a hydrogen fuel cell. I understand that the U.S. government is interested in promoting hydrogen energy. This is back in 1998.
Uh-huh.
And if you're interested, we are ready to go. Please call me. I think I'm going to need about $40,000-$50,000 to build this fuel cell, and I left it as a message. 20 minutes later, I got a message on my machine at the school, and the guy that answered the call said, we can give you $30,000. We can actually also give you the two engineers you need to build this if you can get this done and present it with your children in Washington, D.C. 6 months from now. And I said, done deal. Where do I sign?
Right. I mean, it's amazing what can happen when you ask.
Not only what can happen, but when you prepare the young people for the opportunities.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I think is missing. And I'll give it to me. I'm going to listen to the radio. She's going to announce it again. But thank you so much. And God bless everything that you do, your house, the school, and your heart for the passion that you have for our children.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
All right.
So now. We kind of touched on my next question, and that is that for someone that might really feel like, wow, I don't have the money, I don't have the connections, how could I even do this project? What would you say about that? And particularly, a project where maybe the family didn't have a lot of money to pour into it or didn't have the right contacts.
Good question. The students can do projects like writing a book and working with their English teacher. So I've got a student right now who's writing a book, and she's 15 now, but she started when she was 14, and she's writing a book about teenage angst.
Mm.
And she's writing because she said that at her school, there's the highest suicide rate across the nation is in her school. It's in the Silicon Valley, which is really high power people. And she just said, people are so mean. She said that girls are. She says just to find friends, it's impossible, and that they love you one day and they'll hate you the next day. And she says, and she just kind of cowered to it. And then when I was working with her, I just said, it's not you. You realize that, right? It's her. I wonder what's going on with her at home.
Right.
And she's now really interested in studying psychology because she wants to understand what motivates people to be that vicious, you know. And and what she did was, so she's writing a book and using her book as a platform for other people to read it. And she's writing in a fictional tale. She's also a brilliant artist, so she's illustrating it, and it'll be done in about 6 months. And she's gonna, and we're gonna, it'll be on my website. And she's going to publish it out there for other kids. So this book is a free book, you know, because she's writing it on her own. She's working with an English teacher, and the teacher's helping her with, you know, what you need to develop that character. And, you know, so she's getting a, she's going to get an amazing letter of recommendation from this teacher when she's ready to apply to colleges also. So that's a free project. Another thing she can, another students can do is they can create nonprofits, you know, so that, and that's just about free to do also. And it's fairly easy to do, and that way you can raise money, you know, so you can raise money for your event, and you can go out and seek investors to invest in, if you've, if you've got an idea like a device to build. I've got a student that's building or designing a a fire retardant. So here in California, we've got fires everywhere. I think we've got 15 fires right now, but last year we had two fires that just devastated the state. Well, this student lives really close to Paradise, which is where the you know, fire took out, I think, 22,000. I don't want to say the numbers. I'm getting mixed up. But took out a lot of homes and killed lots of people. So what he did was he designed this little device where if he puts it up on a PG&E line, you know, the electrical power lines, if there's a spark, the spark would pierce the balloon type, the structure, and it'd be filled with fire retardant, so it would immediately snuff out the flame. And that way the fire wouldn't start. Because what he kept saying to me, you know, again, out of the mouth of babes, he said, why is it that we hear about fires when it's at 20,000 acres? What happened to 5 acres? What happened to 20 feet? You know, why is it that we don't hear about these things and that there's so many fires and they're going to just, they're just going to devastate the entire state? We're going to be up in flames. And I just said, well, you know what? How do we put it out? Why is it, why does it take them that long, you know, to get to the fire? Is it that difficult? And he did the research, and, you know, we met weekly to discuss how to come to this conclusion. And now he's going to be meeting with fire chiefs all over the state of California, and they're going to help advise him on how to develop his product so that he can present it to the power companies to show them how we can stop, you know, to mitigate the crazy wild fires. Again, that so far is not costing anything. When he actually starts devising the product, I think he's going to be able to get Cal Fire and get all the different fire departments to chip in to help fund his project. So that's, if you have a great idea, don't feel that you can't do it, because I'm sure you can go out and get money, whether it's through GoFundMe or Indiegogo. You can also get private people who think it's a great idea and support it that way. So there's ways to get your funds, and especially if you get out there on social media and just tell people, I've got this brilliant idea.
Right.
Can you help me with that?
Sure.
So I wouldn't. And then the other thing we can do that I like to recommend for my listening audience is that you can find mentors. There are so many professional retirees across the United States that if you can go to organizations like engineering corp organizations where you just say, I'm trying to build this, I need a chemical engineer to help, I don't have any funds, can you help me by being my mentor for the next 2 years? He will or she will get a lot of responses from retirees who are very, very happy to help students who are bright and excited, and they may even help fund the project. So there's so there are lots of ways to do this. And as a matter of fact, these students who do this, who don't have the funds, these parents with these big checkbooks, when they write their college admissions applications, essays, they can actually say that. They said, my parents don't have the funds. As a matter of fact, I was going to community college, but I had my heart set on, you know, XYZ college. And I wanted to go there, and I didn't have the funds to do my project, so here's what I did. And they tell their story in their interview, or they tell their story in those personal statements. Those are the stories that the college admissions officers love. Those are the kids that get into these colleges, and they get full rides. That's how you get those full rides, is by showing and demonstrating that you can do this because you've already done it in high school. So if you're going to compete and say, hey, I'm really smart, and I come from a low-income family, or I'm a minority student, or whatever it is, and you're competing with all the others just like you in the country, you're not going to get in. But if you can say, over the past 2 or 3 years, you know, I haven't had the funds, and I, you know, had to work a part-time job to, you know, help pay rent and and or to buy my clothes for school, and you write that in your essay, and you said, but you know, this one thing has been really been bugging me, and what I've done is I did this, this, and this, and I hit a brick wall, and I couldn't go any further because I didn't have the funding, or I didn't have the expertise to go forward. But then I went to the university, and I asked the professor if he can help me, and so-and-so at this professor at this university helped me put this together and guided me, and I worked with a grad student over here and this retired engineer over here, and voila, look what I've got.
Right.
That is a student who I would invest in, you know? So it's something that, that people just, that's where people just, you know, just swoon, just go to. It's like, that is the future of America. That is who we are, you know?
Right.
That's what we are. And that's what I love about the projects, is it gives a it creates an equal playing field, because these kids who go out and do that will get in before the kids who have parents with big checkbooks and write checks for all the engineers to come in and help them. These students are in a better position.
And I want to
answer your question.
Oh, absolutely. I want to remind our listeners that you're tuned in to WOLB 1010 AM. This is Carol Mileta at Parenting 411. I am talking to Susan Tatsui Darcy. She is the author of Beat the College Admissions Game with Project Merit. And that's what we're talking about today. If you'd like to learn about her as we're speaking, you can visit her website at www.meritworld.com. Now, Susan, let's talk again. You talked about it a little bit, about parents' role in this project, because I think sometimes parents get a little over-involved in their children's projects, starting at a very early age, you know, the science fair at school.
That's right.
Or whatever. I mean, I remember that as well. I've told that story before, where my son had started a new school for middle school, and I was at a basketball game, and the moms, you know, as the game was going on, the moms were on the bench talking about the science project, and oh my gosh, how much work it was for them, and oh, what they've been doing, and all of this other. And I, again, I was new to the school. I was like, wow, is this what it is? Because I'm not helping. I mean, I didn't say anything, but I said, I'm not helping my child with his project. And I didn't, I mean, except for, you know, making sure he was doing, putting the time in and everything. And I mean, they were talking about elaborate stuff they were doing, cutting out, and it almost sounded like scrapbooking, it just everything. And so I didn't do that. And my son, for whatever reason, he had to do sketches and things like that. And we have colored pencils. We have a lot of supplies at home that he could use, but he just wanted to do it in pencil and sketch it and do all of that. And so I let him do that. And so he turned in the project. It was the big day. So again, having had this conversation with the other mothers, I was worried. So when he came home, I'm like, how did you do with the project? He said, oh, I did, you know, I did really well. I got a very good grade on it. And I said, well, where is it? You know, I wanted to see it. He said, oh, no, she has it. She put it on display, like his project with, you know, instead of all of these elaborate projects that the moms and dads worked on. So that was really a good lesson for him and for me. I mean, I really had no intention of doing the project for him, but it certainly made me feel better. But sometimes you're in those situations and you feel like, wow, am I like a slacker parent or something? Everybody's doing it. But, you know, for the reasons that you've described in the examples, it's just so much more rewarding for the student, both for getting into college and just beyond, that it really is important to let them do these things themselves. So what can parents do?
I agree with you. I'll tell you a story also. I've got a student I was working with who was creating an app for an Uber for children, and it was a brilliant idea. And he was excited, and we met, and he was every week he'd come back with new ideas, and then we laid out his website, and I said, okay, let's create the app, you know, which is coding. Mm-hmm. And he's a business. He's a high school student, but he was interested in going into business. So we started laying it all out, and I told him I would get one of my college advisory specialists to help him learn how to code so he can build this website, I mean, build his app for his phone, mm-hmm. for the phone, and set it up for iPhones and for Androids. We're all ready to go, and then all of a sudden, one day, his dad walked into one of our meetings and just said, I've decided that we're going to get this done in India, mm-hmm. and it'll be much cheaper and faster, and that way we can just get to the point, and that way he can start writing his college application essays with you. And I just looked at him, and I said, no. No, that is terrible. You can't do that. And he says, no. He goes, this is too expensive to go with, you know, hiring a college advisory specialist and all this. And so he flew to India, which, you know, it costs a fortune to do that, which is crazy because I know he spent way more money than it would have cost for us to do it with him. And every week when I met with his son, this brilliant, wonderful, you know, really excited entrepreneurial kid turned into, by the end of the 2 or 3 months that it took for his father to build this app for him.
Wow.
To his body language, his slumped shoulders, he was depressed. He didn't have any sparkle in his eye anymore. I'm serious. I'm not exaggerating at all. Mm. And I would ask him, I'd just say, how are you? And he goes, okay. And he knew what I was going to ask. I'd say, where is your project? What's going on? What level? Did they do this yet? Did they do this? Because we wanted this, this, and this. And remember all the things we were talking about? And we were really concerned about liability. So did you check into liability? And he'd look at me and he'd say, I don't know. He goes, I don't speak the language they speak. He goes, I can't even communicate. My dad's the only one who can, and he's not going there for another month.
Oh, goodness.
And it turned out that it didn't get done in 3 months. It got done in 6 months. And in the end, he didn't even want to apply to the colleges that we were originally going to have him apply to.
Yeah.
He ended up applying to all state schools. He went to a school where he didn't need a project because they didn't even have an essay. Because I believe in his heart that he actually has integrity, unlike his dad, and that he felt that he didn't deserve to go. Because he told his parents, I'm not applying to those colleges. I'm going to apply to this college because I know I can get in. He applied to, I'm not going to name the college,
but
applied to a public school, went ahead and left. And I was, and that's the perfect example of what happens to students. And I'm hoping parents really hear this. And I love your story, the fact that you knew that these parents were doing these things and you're watching your son do something with a pencil when he had color pencils available. But it was his idea and it was his project, and he did it and he did well and he got rewarded for that. Mm-hmm. Parents need to hear that because of the college admissions scandal that has happened in the past, you know, 6 or 7 months. Colleges are now really, really watching. They're looking at these. If anything looks out of ordinary, they're going to assume parents mm-hmm. paid for it, lied, cheated, parents did this.
Mm.
Students going to have to prove more than ever that they did the work. And like I tell people, for both my kids, they both did, you know, science-y type projects, and mm-hmm. I am not a science person, and neither is my husband. So mm. we were in a position where we never had to prove anything because people would ask me questions, and I'd look at them and I'm saying, you're speaking Greek to me. That's my kid's project. If you want to find out what path I took to drive them to the airport to do that, I can tell you that.
Right.
But that's as far as my responsibility goes. So for parents, when you want to support your kids, you want to encourage them. One of the things that I do tell parents is that look at their schedule, because kids are overscheduled. Mm. And when they tell you things like, well, I don't have time to do a project, the first thing you say is, number one, GPA. You've got to allow enough time for you to do well in your classes, study, do your homework, prep for finals. Number two, SAT, ACTs. Yes, they count. As much as I don't like the test, they do need to prep for that.
That's
and
true.
They need to learn how to take that test, because the whole country relies on that test as part of the equation. So GPA, SAT, ACT scores. Number three is your extracurricular, okay? Mm. A curricular. Not three sports, football, basketball, tennis, no. Not playing violin, guitar, and piano. And not being part of 15 clubs and president of five, because they're not going to believe it. They're going to think you're a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yes.
And that gets you nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to put your fingers everywhere, because I've done everything, because somebody told me you have to be a pianist, and somebody told me you've got to be able to play tennis or lacrosse or something, don't listen to everybody else. Think about it. These colleges are businesses. They want to have a successful incoming class, so when they graduate 4 years later, these kids are going to go off and do phenomenal things with their lives, and they're going to say, people are going to say, where did they go to college? and it's going to go back to them. It's their advertising. So you need to show them that your kid or your student needs to show the colleges mm-hmm. that they have what it takes. And by doing a project in high school, you're going to demonstrate that you've already done it. So obviously, when you leave college, you're going to really do amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And focus on one or two things. So I say, if you really have a passion for sport, pick one sport, do only one sport, and hopefully it's not a sport that takes a full year, so you do have some off time.
Mm-hmm.
Sports take like 15, 20 hours a week.
Yes.
Whereas a project only takes 3 or 4 hours a week. It mm-hmm. doesn't take that much time.
Mm-hmm.
And clubs, I mean, only do a club because you love the club, you know, or start
right.
a club based on your project.
Yes.
You get other people to volunteer under you because then you show that you've created something that didn't exist before. You're using your ability as a leader to get other people to volunteer at your events, to volunteer by spreading the idea through social media, through these volunteers, but you're using your mental capacity to help other people move your project forward. Just
right.
like with Habitat with Humanity. People, colleges would love the person who started the first Habitat, not the millions of people who show up with their bucket of nails and their hammer and say, I'm here, where do I go?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want a babysitter? Do you want me to paint? Or what do I need to do? And I feel great about myself after I'm done and go back home, because there are tens of thousands of kids writing that same essay.
Mm-hmm.
But if your kid does a project and the project is, you know, we can even talk about the same story. There's a mm-hmm. homeless person down the street, and I've been watching him, and I give him food once in a while, and I realize that that's not enough. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, do you give a person a fish or a fishing pole? And I went and I helped this person, and we
mm-hmm.
went down to the lumber yard and got some scrap wood, and we created a little shelter for him. And
right.
I helped him do this, and we did it for free, and now he's one of my buds, and I, you know, every day from after school, I bring him food, and he's doing this. And I'm trying to get him to come and be, you know, a volunteer at our school doing, you know, something or another, and hoping he might get a job. That essay is
mm-hmm.
going to get them into a better position than somebody whose parents paid $4,000 for them to fly somewhere
mm-hmm.
so that they can do some volunteer work. Or I have kids, all my kids right now are just in Africa. They're all over the world doing all these great projects all over the world. But these projects are not real projects. These are projects where their parents are paying $7,000 for them to go do something really fun for 3 weeks with their friends and come back and be able to brag about it in their essays, and I
right.
tell them that that's not strong enough anymore. It used
right.
to be, you know, 20 right. years ago that was a cool thing, and I'm glad it's not. I'm glad the colleges are looking at that like, your parent paid for you to do that. We want your parent, the one who figured out that would be a cool thing for you to do, because these kids don't figure it out. You know?
Well, speaking of colleges, what feedback have you gotten, you know, at your school and at your consulting group regarding project merit in particular, and the weight that they've give such projects when they review the applications?
They love it. I actually have a student who had a 3.0 GPA
mm.
and got into NYU this year.
Wow.
She got into NYU because of her project. She was on a wait list, and what happened was, the nice thing about a project is it keeps growing. So she applied to the school, to NYU. I forget when she applied. I think by January 1st or 15th, and she ended up sending her. She did a TED Talk here at our school, so she did one of our TED Talks, and she received a bunch of requests to speak at other organizations,
mm-hmm.
and she wrote a letter to NYU and just said, not only did I do my project on, it was on vaccine versus anti-vaxxing,
mm-hmm.
and she went out and did that, and she said, well, now I'm being asked to speak at all these conventions across the United States, and I'm gonna, and here's my schedule, and she actually wrote them, and she did this in February or March, you
right.
know, when they're making the final decisions, and they pulled her off the wait list, and she got accepted, and I gotta tell you, that's really unheard of.
That's unheard of, 3.0,
yeah.
you know, yeah. You're right. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not putting that down, but in this environment, it's like,
yeah.
you know, 4.6 or, you know, that's what
exactly.
That's what you're competing
exactly.
against. Yeah. So.
And that's how these kids who do projects get in, because it demonstrates their integrity, and it demonstrates their tenacity, and
mm-hmm.
it separates them out from, distinguishes them from everybody that's competing, because
mm-hmm.
they've done it, and they've learned how to frame their argument. They learned how to not take no for an answer. I mean, these kids are, you know, they get beaten down all the time, and they keep pulling themselves up, and it's not their parents. These kids get up on their own, and we guide them. You know, we
mm-hmm.
say, okay, now here's our next step. You got rejected from this college and this college. What are you going to do about it? And they say, well, what do I do about it? And I just said, how badly do you want to go?
Right.
You know, and they roll up their sleeves, and I say, you've got to show them. You've got to let them understand who you are, what you've done, and then you've got to really ramp up your game. This is senior year in January. Most kids have senioritis at that point.
Right.
So colleges know that, and these kids are out there really pushing their projects and using their projects as more leverage to be able to communicate with the colleges. And that's the only way you can do that, because colleges don't want to hear from you when you just say, oh, please let me in. This is my number one school. My parents went there. My boyfriend's going there. They don't care about that. When you call them and say that I just got two speaking engagements, you know, near you, I'd love to come see you. Are you available? I'd like to talk to you a little about that wait list you've got there.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden they start listening. You know,
right.
And they realize that of all the 30 or 300 or 3,000 people on our wait list, this student is the only one who came through like this and she got herself in.
Now, aside from being pleased to get into the college of their choice, what are students telling you about their experience with Project Merit?
It changes their lives. You know, it sounds really bold, but it really, really does.
Mm-hmm.
They become secure. It's the first time in their lives where, you know, your mom and your dad tell you, we love you, you're smart, you're gorgeous, you're the best, and they know it's mom and dad. You know, but when the press comes out to talk to you and they tell you that you're remarkable, then all of a sudden they start looking at themselves in the mirror a little bit differently. And they're in a position where they are proud of who they are, and they realize that they have meaning, that their existence is important, and that they're not like everybody else. For instance, my youngest daughter, when she graduated from high school, just before she headed off to Claremont McKenna College here in California, she asked me to drive her to a party. And I drove her, and as I'm driving down the road, I'm feeling the music pulsating through my car. And I'm seeing these kids walking around with beers in their, you know, these teenage kids walking around with beers in their hand. And I just said, Jacqueline, really? You want me to drop you off at this party? It's going to get busted, really?
Right.
And she looked at me. And she had done four projects, and she had started two businesses and four projects by this time, and she was like 17. And she looked at me and said, Mom, do you think I've worked this hard to have a 4.6 GPA, have done four projects, written three books, and I'm going to go into this party and get pregnant, do drugs, and get put in jail? And I looked at her, and I was so proud. I just looked at her and I said, call me when you're ready. And she just popped out. And 2 hours later, she called me and said, pick me up, Mom. And I drove up, and I see her standing outside waving at me, and she looked all cute and chipper and everything. And I said, you called me so early. It's only been 2 hours. She says, oh, no. She goes, you're right. She said, I do think the cops are going to come by and close down the party because they've been, neighbors are complaining. And she said, and my friends are, she goes, I had so much fun because I got to see everybody and we had a great time. She says, but you're right. She goes, they're all getting a little sloppy and they're all hooking up. And she said, it's time to leave. She says, I did what I wanted to do. I came here, I got to see everybody, had a great time, and now I want to go home before the trouble starts. And, you know, that's a project. You know, when she told me that I've worked this hard in my life to get where I am, why would I blow it and do something stupid, you know?
Right.
And that's what a project does. It gives the kids, outside of mom and dad telling them they're perfect, it gives them the ability to look at themselves through the eyes of the world and to say that, God, I just received, you know, 20 interviews or offers for interviews for radio, TV, newspapers, magazines. And when people ask for those interviews, you're obviously worth something. You've got something to share that they want to share with the world.
Right.
And that changes a child's perspective on who they are. So
sure.
I think that, and that's a typical response I get from the students who go off and do things. And they keep in touch with me. You know, they let
that's
me know
good.
What's going on in their lives, and I kind of keep track of what they're doing and, you know, where they're going. But every single one of my students goes out and does something really exciting with their lives.
Well, that's pretty cool. And there, in the few minutes that we have left, there is something else I wanted to let parents know or let listeners know about another book that you've written that is also could also be very useful, particularly for moms and parents who are managing the college process. It's the 21st Century Mother's Guide to Managing Your Time and Taking Control of Your Life. And I think that that's really important because the college process can really consume the household. If you're not careful, because, I mean, there's some things you just have to do. You have to plan the college visits and things like that. But, you know, having all of the time and just energy and stress, kind of everything directed with that that child, that particular child that's applying to college, can really just disrupt your lives. And, you know, and it doesn't have to be that way. So if you kind of have a sense of your own priorities as a parent and what you want to do in your own life, and also have that healthy regard for your child's competence and capability, and allowing them to assume responsibility for as much of their process as they can, that can make a real difference. And it sounds like you incorporated, did you incorporate Project Merit into that, or how do you link those two books?
The book, 21st Century Mother's Guide to Managing Your Time and Taking Control of Your Life, mm-hmm. is for moms. It's helping
right.
moms keep their lives together so that they can be there for their kids.
Right.
But basically, I also have another book. It's called The Merit Planner, and
mm-hmm.
it's on the website for meritworld.com. You just go to books, and it's there. The Merit Planner, I actually have a whiteboard video that explains how to do all of this, which
okay.
is to use your planner to organize everything you do and delegate, delegate, delegate. So for moms, like for spring cleaning, for instance, I put this on the whiteboard, just put down everything that needed to be done in the whole house and property.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the whole family come up, and I said, circle with your color of pen what you want to do and put it in your planner for when you are going to do it. And the planner I'm talking about is a Monday through Sunday,
mm-hmm.
6 a.m. till midnight, and they block it off. They say, oh, I'm going to clean out the toilets here. I'm going to clean out the gutters here. I'm going to replace the fencing here, and I'm going to do this. I need these materials, Mom. And they gave me all the materials. And the whole family went through, and they put all the things done. The whole entire list was completely done.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I sat down, I said, perfect. You guys all need to do this. We get it done in a month, and we'll be done with spring cleaning for a full year. Congratulations. We'll have a pizza party. And then my oldest daughter came up to me, and she said, oh, what are you doing? And I said, I don't need to do anything because you guys all said this is your favorite thing. I don't do toilets. I'm going to do the refrigerator. I'm going to take the whole refrigerator apart. And everybody picked. They ran up there, and they circled everything. I said, when I went up there, there was nothing for me to do. I'm going to go buy the materials, and I'll have the pizza party. And they looked at me like, what? And I said, and I tell moms, I said, and that is the example I want to just leave with, is that you have a tremendous job, and it's impossible for you to do it yourself. But you
mm-hmm.
can delegate, delegate, delegate. Even if you have a husband who's not cooperating, you can figure out what he is willing to do
mm-hmm.
and put it in his planner and say, you need to get this done. Everybody's got their chores. Just give me a list. I'll give you all your stuff. It's got to be here. And then for the kids, it's like, okay, you guys want to sleep over, go to a party, whatever. Okay, as soon as all these chores are done, we're done. And then carpools, set up carpools. And this
mm-hmm.
book lays out all of that. If you want to, there's no reason to drive your kid to school every single day. That's 10 trips a week.
Mm-hmm.
Carpool.
Right.
Saves on energy and everything, and shopping lists. I had my kids starting at 5 years old. My kids were required to produce or to prepare a meal every week.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the kids, one of my daughters she made Chinese chicken salad every single Monday
mm-hmm.
for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. Every Monday I knew I was going to get Chinese chicken. The other one would give us these gourmet meals with candlelight and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But what it did was it taught them how to take responsibility, and it took 4 meals off the plate for me in terms
mm-hmm.
of, you know, preparing meals.
There
myself.
You go.
So by delegate, 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 plus your kids learn valuable skills.
It's valuable life skills, cooks. Absolutely.
Exactly. And then also to understand how to motivate people to do things that you don't want to do. They watch me do it every year, and they're just like, how did you talk us into it again? <You
know?
laughs> and it works.
Right, right.
So, yeah, so the Merit Planner, is they have to write it down. You can't just tell them to do it because then you'll spend your whole time nagging. What I do is say, okay, you've got your list, put it in your planner, block it off. So you're going to do it from 10 to 12 on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And on Sunday, you're going to do from 10:30 to 4 o'clock. You're going to weed the whole property or whatever.
Okay, well, now
put
listen.
Put it in the planner, and they're good.
Now, very quickly, tell us what's next for you.
Well, as California Mother of the Year,
mm-hmm.
I am taking on fire prevention. So that's one of my big projects, is to get everybody in California in a position where they create their go bags and they sign up for Code Red, so they are aware of problems that are coming down the pike.
Okay.
So that's one of the big things I'm doing for as California Mother. But
okay.
for the project part, there are 4 million kids
mm-hmm.
in the United States that enter ninth grade every year.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to get 4 million kids to do a project for 4 years.
Okay.
If we get those 4 million kids to do a project for 4 years, we are going to solve major problems that the government,
mm-hmm.
corporations,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, are not going to do. And these kids, one at a time, can do this. Just like Greta Thunberg with climate change,
mm-hmm.
we can solve climate crisis, child care, civil rights, endangered species, deforestation, plastics, everything can be solved with these.
Wonderful.
So that is my next step.
Okay, well, that's great. And I would say that as D.C. Mother of the Year, I want to let everyone know that I'll be hosting a parent forum on Saturday, September 14th from 10:30 to 1:30 at Shepherd Park Public Library in Washington, D.C. We'll be talking about bullying, reading, as well as how to help your students manage stress. I'll have more details as the show, as time allows, but I am happy that I had a chance to talk with you, Susan, and thank you all for listening.
Thank you. And I do it 1,000 times again.
WOLB Baltimore and WERQ FM HD3 Baltimore.
This is Donnell Spivey from Exit Spivey Professional Realty. I've been selling real estate in the Baltimore metro area for over 30 years. I invite you to join me on our real estate wealth building show every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. on WOLB 1010 a.m. We'll be discussing how to build wealth through real estate. For buyers, we will be discussing student loans.